The immigration debate continues to heat up, and there's no reason to believe it's going to cool off any time in the near future. Welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks for being part of our show today, where we're going to take a look at some of the proposals from the Trump administration regarding immigration, the effects they would have on our region, and the response of many of those who are opposed to the proposals. Now, we're going to get to our guests in a moment, but I'd like to remind you that your comments and your questions are always welcome. The best way to get them to us is by email. We're at tfs@wshu.org. And don't forget, we're on Facebook at Full Story WSHU. As I mentioned, we have a number of guests today, but we want to start by welcoming back William Tong, Connecticut's Attorney General. Hello, sir. Always good to speak with you. Thanks for your time.
Hey, Ron. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure, as always. As I mentioned a moment ago, the Trump administration has proposed changes to the federal immigration rules. Can you tell us about them and what you think about those changes?
Yeah, I mean, where do we start? The most recent outrage is yesterday or the day before we heard that the administration and the president are now attacking military families and that they're changing the rules for children born to American citizens who are serving the U.S. government or in the military and are serving abroad. And they're saying that those children are no longer automatically American citizens. And they're making it much harder for people who are serving this country and serving in our military. And, you know, this underscores it's not only a cruel policy and a very hurtful and damaging policy, but it's utterly pointless to use the instrument of the federal government to attack its own, including its military. And so that's just indicative of, I think, where this president is. It's hard to know what his purpose is other than to radically remake our system of immigration here in this country and to remake our nation.
What are you doing in response to these proposals?
So we filed suit, for example, on the public charge rule, which attacks the core of Connecticut's workforce and people who are either here on temporary status legally or who have green cards and want to change their status. Now Trump purports to say that if you have used federal programs in the past 3 years for a 12-month period, so if you you know, had a tough time and you're working but you needed help with food stamps or Section 8 housing or Medicaid, if you access those basic federal programs because you needed some assistance, and a lot of us get in a jam. You know, working people, particularly the working poor, it's not always easy to make the rent or to put food on the table. And if you needed help for a 12-month period, now you could face adverse immigration consequences. You may not get a green card, you may not get citizenship, and you may get deported. And so we filed suit there. We filed suit to stop the president from building a border wall that Congress said that he shall not build when he tried to declare a false national emergency. We've won an injunction in that case, and it's still being litigated. And so, you know, we're on the front lines with respect to the separation policy and the treatment of children and families in our immigration system, and we're doing what we can for Connecticut families. And I'm arguing, I argued on behalf of the state of Connecticut in the First Circuit, the United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit in Boston about a month ago. And on Tuesday, I will be going to the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in New York, again, to stand up for Connecticut and Connecticut residents and a young woman named Wazara Walton, who is under attack by ICE. And I'm going to do what I can to assert Connecticut's interest and to help protect her and her family.
I know you mentioned just at the beginning of what you were saying there about the Connecticut workforce, and I want to get your reaction to a guest that we had on just the other day. Andrew Lim was with us, and we had done a show about immigration, about the economic impact of immigrants to our region and the country. He's the director of quantitative research at New American Economy, and this is what he had to say, and I hope you can listen to it, and then maybe we could talk about it.
Okay, sure.
for jobs that require specific skills, whether it's things like home health aides or surgeons or engineers or people who manually pick crops during harvest, you know, these are all jobs that immigrants tend to do more so than the U.S.-born. And these are all jobs that are really critical to their individual industries. And so without the workers there to sort of fill those job openings, you know, employers and businesses can't function or operate at an efficient level.
And this goes to exactly what you were talking about, the fact that this directly impacts our region's economy, the workforce.
Now, that's exactly right. I mean, when you talk about the public charge rule, you know, I'm thinking about the single mom who's a paraprofessional, for example, in a school system, or a bus driver who just started working in most school systems yesterday in the new school year. People that clean your office building and my office building, people at the core of the service economy, like my parents were when they came to this country, and of course a whole host of other people that work in hospitals and universities and big companies and manufacturing companies that are still so vital to this country. Many of them are not citizens. Many of them have green cards. Many of them were students who came here on a temporary status, and they are all vital to our economy and to growth, and to turn our proverbial policy guns on those people and to weaponize poverty against them and to say, because, you know, you are working but are having a tough time making it, because some of these folks you would call the working poor, we're going to hold that against you and potentially toss you out of this country when we need them. We need our friends and neighbors who are immigrants to power this economy, because many of them are doing the work.
You mentioned your parents, and you were kind enough in the past to share some of your family history with us. And I was thinking about you the other day, and I knew that you were coming on today, and I was thinking, man, does this really strike a chord with you?
It does, because if you think long and hard about what the president is saying, when he says that he's going to denaturalize American citizens, he means my parents. When he says he wants to deny birthright citizenship, he's talking about me. I have birthright citizenship. And when he attacks me and so many other children of immigrants and calls us anchor babies, he's attacking many of us, and he's attacking himself. He is a child of immigrants. And so even the president can't escape this truth that we are all the children of immigrants, and many of us are anchor babies, and many of us have birthright citizenship, and many of us are the children of or are ourselves naturalized citizens, and we are a vital and essential part of the fabric of this nation, and it's what makes us strong.
Mr. Attorney General, shortly after this proposal was made, I was watching a talk show. And I forget if it was CNN or MSNBC, and one of the commentators on it said, forget everything else that is going on with the horrible detention facilities at the border, with the border wall. This is what the Trump administration really wants. This is what they planned for from the beginning. Was that commentator right?
Yeah, I think it's a fundamental plan to dismantle this country and dismantle a system of government and accountability and justice and equity and sort of a community where we take care of each other and we do everything we can to provide freedom and opportunity for everyone in this country, including people that come here from other places. And it's a totally different concept of what it means to be American. I think President Trump believes that the purpose of public and private institutions is to make him and his friends as rich as they can possibly be. And the rest of us be damned. And that's just not how I think many of us here in Connecticut and across the state and across this country think of our country. That's not how we conceive of what it means to be an American. And that's why we're fighting so hard to protect our constitutional system, our federal system, and our system of laws that keeps all of us safe and free.
Just before we went on the air, I just jotted down some quick notes to myself, and I said, boy, you have some work, your work cut out for you. I wrote down immigration, immigration, car emissions, endangered species, methane emissions. I mean, the list goes on, doesn't it?
Well, I'm sorry to say, Ron, too, I don't know if you got my email, but I can't stay on too long with you today because I have to hop onto a conference call of the states with respect to the opioid crisis. And I know that you've seen in the press some recent reports about Purdue Pharma and the Sacklers, whom I'm aggressively pursuing. And I spend much of my day on the phone with my fellow attorneys general discussing these major national efforts.
We appreciate the time that you give us, and any time that you want to come on, you just let us know. And thank you for doing all this work for us.
Thank you so much, Ron.
William Tong is the Attorney General for Connecticut. Have a great Labor Day, sir.
Yeah, same to you. Have a great holiday.
Thank you. I'm going to bring in two guests for you this segment. Sandra Feist is chair of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. And Chris George is the executive director of Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services in Connecticut. Sandra, Chris, thanks for being with us. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for inviting me.
Sandra, can I just get your basic reaction, if you will, to the proposed rule changes?
So to the proposed rule changes specifically relating to the public charge?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I found it profoundly depressing. My own family came here at the turn of the 20th century as Jews fleeing persecution, and they came with nothing, speaking no English. And, you know, three generations later, I know that, you know, I and my parents on both sides, a lot of us have advanced degrees and are giving back. And so the idea that we would have such short-sighted policy that is also so cruel is just truly depressing and counterproductive.
I just want you to know, it's interesting that you use that word cruel. We pre-recorded a discussion with the Social Services Commissioner in Connecticut a little bit earlier today. Her name is Deidre Gifford. And one of the lines that she said, and I wrote it down, she said that there's an element of cruelty to this. Chris, do you also see this as somewhat cruel?
Yes. In fact, it is just another attempt by the administration to use cruelty and, you know, inhumane conditions and, you know, horrible practices like separating children from their parents by tricking them to discourage immigrants, asylum seekers, refugees from coming to this country. Who could ever imagine that our government would be doing these things? It's just unbelievable.
So, Sandra, how do you fight this?
That's a good question. I think voting and showing that we do not support an administration that would be so cruel. And also just, you know, talking with reporters like you and talking about the importance of immigrants to the United States and the really broad impact that this type of a rule will have. I work primarily with professionals who are immigrating to the United States based on their jobs. And this rule has had a big impact even on the clients that I work with who are typically not low income. For example, I'm working with a Chinese immersion teacher who previously, when she was a student, had some small housing assistance. And now she has a child who was eligible for a scholarship at public school, some sort of special program. And she is really, really worried about her green card case, even though she's already, you know, very far down the road towards her green card. So it's really a huge sea change in immigration law, and it will have an impact not just on low-income immigrants who need benefits, but on, you know, all of legal immigration and people feeling very uncertain about their future and about, you know, how to live their lives and follow these ever-changing rules.
Chris George, does this fight simply end up in the courtrooms? And I say simply, you know, in quotes, but I mean, is it just going to be a protracted legal battle?
You know, I think the best way to change these new rules to fight against these actions is with grassroots support. We've seen here in Connecticut there are thousands and thousands of people who've stepped forward, volunteers who've stepped forward over the past 3 years to welcome with open arms refugees, not just into the state, but into their neighborhoods, into their communities. The more Americans we can get engaged in welcoming asylum seekers and in understanding the refugee crisis and understanding why immigrants come to this country, the more exposure and contact they can have with immigrants, then they will say, when these actions are taken, you know, that doesn't make sense. You know, I'm sorry, but I know the guy who is working in that restaurant. He's a hardworking guy, and if he has to, you know, get food stamps for his family for a few months, that's no big deal. They make this country stronger. They strengthen the economy. They make this a better place. They'll think back to the similarities with their parents or grandparents. That's what we need to do. It needs to be grassroots pushback against these actions. The Trump administration is out of step with most of America.
I know you weren't able to hear the conversation that I was having with our state attorney general a short time ago, but when these changes were first proposed, I was watching one of the news programs, and I apologize, I can't remember if it was CNN or MSNBC, and it was one of the commentators at that point said, you know, everyone's talking about the border wall, and we're all horrified by what's going on at the camps and what's happening to the children and their families, but this is what the Trump administration has wanted from the very beginning, and this is as major as can be. Sandra, is that accurate?
Yes, definitely. I think they're finding a lot of ways to affect legal immigration and really make it very, very difficult for people to come to this country, be it, you know, to claim asylum, coming as a refugee, but also for people who are coming here legally based, or not that asylum is not legal, but people who are coming here based on their job. Or based on family relatives who are sponsoring them. And they're doing that through not just dramatic, flashy, you know, rule changes and regulatory changes, but they're also doing it through a lot of what I've been calling procedural shenanigans. There are just a lot of things that they're doing to basically use the large bureaucracy of the federal government to hinder and delay and unjustly deny a lot of meritorious cases, applications filed by employers and, you know, foreign nationals who are experts in their fields. So we're seeing it really across the board. It is a war on all fronts, and I think of it as a war of attrition, basically just hoping that if they deny enough cases, even if they get overturned in federal court, that the next generation of, you know, engineering graduates in India or Alzheimer's experts in Iran, like people I've worked with, will just decide to go to a different country and that those people won't even bother.
And in fact, they're probably thinking twice now because the United States is run by an administration that wanted to ban Muslims. You know, Ron, if you were an amazing scientist, you know, in Pakistan, and you were Muslim and you had a chance to come here with your family, would you want to come to a place where you're reading, you know, there's an administration that is out of control, trying to ban Muslims, launching a several front attack against immigrants, you might decide to accept an invitation to Canada instead. And we are worse off because of that.
Chris, but what I'm having trouble figuring out, and Sandra, please jump in on this too, is that from all the reports that I've seen and from what our guest told us the other day, our birth rate is down. We need qualified workers. Employers are begging for qualified employees. If you're looking at it from a business perspective, this simply doesn't make sense, does it?
It doesn't.
Yeah.
No.
Nope. I was going to say, companies are working so hard under the current administration to sponsor talented foreign nationals for jobs. For example, you know, I work a lot with manufacturing companies, with rural manufacturing facilities that have trouble attracting, you know, really skilled engineers. I work with state departments of health who have infectious diseases experts. I work a lot with startup companies that have like computer graphics experts and a lot of kind of product design talent. And those companies wouldn't bother to work this hard and pay so much money and give so much of their time and energy to the process of sponsoring international talent if they didn't truly have no alternative. Like, we do not have enough of these professionals in these fields, in these regions right now, and that's why they're looking to international talent.
Chris, let me ask you this. The other day, one of our guests on our Tuesday program said, and I'm paraphrasing now, he said, you know, the president has said that he doesn't mind more immigrants coming from someplace like Norway. And then our guest went on to say, basically, it appeared to them that this is a push by the president and Stephen Miller and others to try to prevent more people of color from entering the U.S. Is that what it comes down to?
That's definitely what it looks like. You know, when you want to rewrite the poem, the base of the Statue of Liberty, and by the way, that base is pink granite from Connecticut. If you want to rewrite the poem and, you know, change the words, which currently are, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, you're shifting it toward, you know, white Europeans. And I think definitely this has a racist quality to it. And that's another reason why we need to push back against this. We are an amazing, strong country because of the diversity, because immigrants have brought incredibly diverse skills, talents, experience. And I don't know why this administration wants to, you know, shift gears and take us in another direction.
Our program today is basically a part two of a show that we started on Tuesday. And on that show, we had Professor Fred McKinney from Quinnipiac University. And I'm going to play a clip from him. I'm going to ask you to respond to it because it goes to that business aspect that we were talking about. So if we could play this, if you could listen to it. And then Sandra and Chris, I'd love to get your reactions to this.
When more people come to this country, they contribute. They contribute their work. They contribute. They pay taxes. There have been numerous studies that show that immigrants are not as likely to participate at the public trough in public welfare programs. They're not a net drain on budgets at the state or the federal level. This notion that they are harming the economy is simply not true.
Sandra Feist, your reaction, please.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I actually listened to that program and I was like, yes. I think that one thing that's really interesting is that people always assume that individuals who are coming here from, you know, war-torn, turbulent regions are going to come and take. But actually, there's no reason to assume that those people are not also professionals and with degrees and ambition. I've worked with a Syrian theater director who is amazing and doing kind of incredible work all across the country. I've worked a lot with Syrian engineers. I'm working right now with a Libyan MBA grad on his green card. So I just look at the people that I work with, and I work with people who are on kind of, you know, more like construction workers and people who are, you know, on that end of the professional spectrum. And then I also work a lot with doctors and engineers and artists and athletes. And, you know, across the board, they're coming here with a lot of energy and excitement and talent and vision for their lives. And I think if you look at people who were born in the United States and just by our birth, we are U.S. citizens. You know, some of us are inspired and ambitious and some of us aren't. But I think if you look at immigrants, like basically, like obviously there are exceptions to every rule, but I just look at the people that I have worked with over the past 18 years and I am every day inspired by the work that they do and their talent and just their energy. So I listened to your program from the other day, and I was cheering. I was punching the air. I totally agree.
Ron, if you and your listeners want to see the American dream in action, and alive and well, come to my office and hang out with refugees. That's where you'll see people with spirit, with grit, with determination to make sure the lives of their children they brought with them are going to be much better than their lives, and their grandchildren even better than that. And it happens. So this is what has made this country great. And to launch an attack against the immigration that's happened, refugee resettlement specifically, blocking asylum seekers, all of the actions that have been taken at the border. You know, behind the scenes over the past couple of years, we've also seen the number of refugees invited to this country plummet from what it should be, which is over 100,000, to what it is now, which is around 25,000.
Chris, what's the atmosphere like in Connecticut nowadays?
The atmosphere in our office among my clients, refugees and immigrants, asylum seekers, they're scared. I'll be honest with you. They don't know what to make of this. One of the things we haven't mentioned in this discussion of the public charge rule is that it is kind of complicated. No one knows exactly when it's going to begin. Things have changed so much over the past couple of years that it has sent a kind of chilling effect across the entire immigrant community, including people who are exempt from this rule. They're just not sure. So people are worried.
But why would those who would be exempt from this, why would they be concerned?
Well, they're worried because they just see week after week new rules, changes. And some have said to me, you know, Chris, can you assure me I'm not going to be deported?
So I
think I can.
They're uncertain of their future.
But, you know,
okay.
According to the laws now, it is impossible. But, you know, there are things changing. There are things that are changing every week. I mean, Sandra, can you assure a refugee who has come here that they're not going to be deported ever?
No. And I think, like, that atmosphere extends to all immigrants. So the people that I work with generally, you know, have a very secure, straightforward path to their status and their green card. And they, like, pretty much universally are freaking out. So, you know, my Canadian nurses and, you know, people from New Zealand who are coming here as management consultants, like, everyone is really, really tense and nervous and anxious. You know, we get such crazy requests for additional evidence these days. Like, I have a client who has a master's degree from a major U.S. university in mechanical engineering, and we received an 11-page request for proof that the degree of mechanical engineering relates to his job as a mechanical engineer. So, like, when you get stuff like that, you're just like, I don't know. Like, I tell them it should get approved. I know it's approvable, but can I guarantee it? No. Things are so unpredictable these days, even, you know, like, across all types of immigration. And they are doing it by using procedure to implement a policy objective. So without changing the law at all, they have changed who is eligible under the law. And it has been dramatic.
I enjoyed our discussion today. We have to wrap it up because I have to take a break. But I promise we'll get both of you back sometime in the future. Joining us now is Deidre Gifford, the Commissioner of Connecticut's Department of Social Services. Commissioner, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Commissioner, what's your take on the proposed changes?
Well, we at the Department of Social Services have been looking at this rule, and we are very concerned about the potential negative impacts on the individuals that we serve in our programs here.
Are you already seeing an effect because of the current atmosphere?
Well, we are starting to hear from advocates and from individuals who deal with our clients in our various services. We are already starting to hear that immigrant communities are quite concerned and confused about the potential implications of this rule. You may have heard from individuals at the Attorney General's press conference who spoke about the interactions they're already beginning to have with immigrant families who are worried about, even before the rule takes effect, whether they should be using Medicaid or supplemental nutrition assistance or food stamps.
We have heard reports about some immigrant families even being afraid to leave the house, to go outside.
Well, I agree that there has been so much activity on the immigration front that there is an environment where immigrants are concerned about their day-to-day interactions. Specific to our services that we administer at the Department of Social Services, the two that are most implicated are the Medicaid program, or HUSCI, and SNAP, or food stamps. And as you say, we are already beginning to hear stories of families that are concerned about participating in these really important and essential programs. And by the way, I want to emphasize that these would be individuals who would be eligible for these programs. We're concerned that they would defer participation in the programs out of fear or confusion.
What can you tell those who are concerned to ease their worries? And also, are you worried that there might be an increase in homelessness or medical issues because of this?
We are worried about that. So, as I was saying, if individuals who would otherwise be eligible, even after this rule were to be implemented, individuals who would otherwise be eligible decline to participate out of an understandable confusion or fear, that will have implications for hunger, for homelessness, because housing benefits are also implicated in the rule, and for medical care. So we're concerned about people deferring preventive services, about vaccination, other types of preventive services, and then individuals, of course, are still going to need health care in emergencies. And so we're worried about increases in the use of emergency departments and other types of uncompensated care for individuals who would otherwise been able to participate in the programs.
This has quite the ripple effect, doesn't it?
Yes, that is exactly what we're worried about, is that although the number of individuals affected by the specific terms of the rule may not be large, that there is what people are referring to as a chilling effect or a deterrent effect on a large number of immigrants and their families who would be deterred from participating in programs for which they are otherwise eligible.
And I was thinking before about the effect that this would have on those in the inner cities versus those who may be in the suburbs. And the cities are already under, as you well know and everyone else knows, a lot of pressure. And this sounds like it would exacerbate the problem to a great extent.
Well, let's take the food stamp program, for example. The estimates are that for every dollar of benefit in food stamps, about $1.80 in economic benefit is generated. So in communities where individuals are receiving SNAP or food stamp benefits, it has a real impact, beneficial financial and economic impact for the communities. So to the extent that this rule reduces the number of otherwise eligible SNAP beneficiaries, it's also going to have, as you say, a ripple effect on the communities in which they live.
We have done in the past a number of programs with those who operate food banks in Connecticut and on Long Island. And I don't think that most people realize the extent of the problem or that the number of people who have to go to food banks for themselves or for their families, for their parents. Is this going to place even more of a burden on those who operate food banks? Or provide services outside of the government?
It certainly will. Depending on the number of individuals who are deterred from accessing the benefits, it could have very important impacts for food banks and other providers of nutrition services. At the Attorney General's news conference where Lieutenant Governor Bicewicz spoke, the Attorney General spoke about the impact of this rule, there were providers of food banks, and they spoke about their concern of being overwhelmed with individuals in need of food assistance if the SNAP program is implicated.
So it sounds like that if these rules do go through, private agencies may have to step up in the future, do even more.
That's certainly a possibility, yes.
Can we talk a little bit about housing and Section 8 housing? Are you concerned that this will somehow impact that?
Well, I would say that housing is not something that we provide here through the Department of Social Services, but it is housing assistance is one of the provisions in the rule that would be counted against individuals who are applying for entry or a change in status. So it is likely similar to what we were talking about with health care and nutrition. It is likely to have an impact as well on individuals seeking housing.
Commissioner, the more and more I hear the news and I think about these things, I wonder many times if this is just coming down to the states versus the federal government all the time. That's what it appears that it's evolving to.
Well, you know, that's obviously a broad and important concern. I would just say that for us at the Department of Social Services and the about a million Connecticut citizens that we serve, we are extremely concerned about the potential negative impacts of this rule. And, you know, the governor spoke in his statement after the rule was issued about his concern that this rule targets really vulnerable immigrant families, and that there's an element of cruelty in the policy that will really cause many eligible, legally present immigrant families from getting the services that they are otherwise entitled to.
Deidre Gifford, the Commissioner of Connecticut's Department of Social Services. Commissioner, thank you. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me on.
And we're going to wrap it up today by spending a few minutes speaking with Claudia Calhoun, the New York Immigration and Refugee Coalition's Senior Director of Immigrant Integration Policy. Claudia, thanks for taking the time to speak with us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it as well.
Claudia, this must be a very trying time for you.
Yeah, I mean, we've been very busy with making sure that New York State's immigrant communities have the information they need about the final rule. A lot of that is focused on community engagement, creating events where people can go and get their questions answered. And I think that's both families themselves that are affected by the rule, as well as service providers that take care of them. You know, the one thing I can say is that we have known really since almost the beginning of the administration that this was something that could happen. And there were, of course, a series of leaked drafts of the proposed rule that gave us a chance to kind of lay the groundwork for a really robust response. And so we feel like we're very well positioned, both within New York and I think with state advocates in other states and also advocates that work sort of at the federal level to fight this with everything that we've got. You know, there's been a series of lawsuits that that we're not part of, but that we're very supportive of to challenge the legality of the rule. And in the meantime, we're just trying to make sure that families who are scared and who are kind of confronted with these terrible choices of having to forgo benefits versus get a green card, you know, families who really have a path forward to get a green card. We're trying to make sure that they have all the information that they need to make some of these tough decisions.
It's I understand how you're trying to get the information out to those who need it. But at the same time, we have been told here and by reporters that there are many immigrants nowadays who won't even go out of the house. They're afraid to answer the door. Or if they do it, they do it in the evening when they feel that someone won't be spotting them. That must be compounding that problem of getting the information to them.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there have been many moments over the last couple of years where there's been tremendous fear and anxiety and distress among different different segments of immigrant communities based on sort of what's going on with sort of attacks on people who are undocumented, the increase in immigration enforcement, the Muslim travel ban. All of those things have really created a sort of intense environment of stress and fear and instability. And this is part of it. You know, this rule targets, this rule isn't really directed at individuals that are undocumented, although this administration has made many policy attacks on those families and those individuals. But this rule really targets people who are, quote unquote, following the rules. It really is trying to make life very difficult for people who are here with status through sponsorship by family member. And so I think it affects both. It's sort of there's what we call a chilling effect. It affects both individuals who are undocumented, who might not necessarily have a pathway to a green card, but may not have the information that you're talking about, as you say. And then it also affects individuals who have status and entitles them to these programs and have been able to benefit and make sure they can put food on the table and make sure that they can go to the doctor and they can take their children to the doctor so that they can be successful in their work and in their communities, and their children can be successful in school. And all of this is all of these administrative assaults are really, really a very malevolent, very racist attack on communities that have come here, either seeking a better life or fleeing the violence or, trying to create better opportunities for their families and for their children. And so,
Claudia, I only have a few minutes left. Can I ask you a question about what did you think about when you heard the head of Citizenship and Immigration Services say, and I believe I'm close to being accurate with the quote, "Give me your tired and your poor who can't stand on their own two feet and will not become a public charge."
I mean, it's really a very visceral sort of example of the kind of malevolence that we're talking about at the federal level. There's a use of immigrant communities as a scapegoat. I think he's trying to put forth an idea that immigrants are a burden to the system, when in fact they generate a lot of tax revenue and they generate a lot of economic growth and a lot of economic activity. And that narrative really is trying to make sure that people don't understand that and really target them and scapegoat them.
That's what we were talking about a little bit earlier in the week. From a business perspective, this doesn't make much sense because so many employers are looking for qualified, hardworking employees, and this fits the bill.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't make economic sense in a bunch of different ways. You know, it's better for people to be able to get green cards and be able to eventually become citizens. It's better for the workforce. It's better for the businesses that depend on their labor. Like something like Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival or DACA. Like if the DREAM Act had passed, there were some economic estimates of sort of all the fiscal benefits that would accrue to the states and to the federal government. And of course, we're going in the opposite direction. So yes, I agree. It doesn't make sense at all.
So does this come back down to what you were just saying a minute or so ago, that the underlying theme here is racism?
That is I believe that. I think that this is part of a broader effort at the federal level that's coordinated across agencies to both sort of from a narrative perspective create confusion and undermine the ideas of the value that immigrants bring to our cities and states and to our nation. And I believe it's also meant to sort of, in practical terms, destabilize families, economically and in terms of emotional distress and stress. And so, advocates do believe that it is there's a racial component and there's an economic component that really targets people who are here working. It's just of a piece of all of the other sort of rhetoric that has been generated, xenophobic rhetoric that has been generated by the federal government.
Claudia, we're out of time. I've enjoyed the conversation. Please come back sometime in the future.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Claudia Calhoun is the New York Immigration and Refugee Coalition's Senior Director of Immigrant Integration Policy. I also want to thank Commissioner Deidre Gifford from the Department of Social Services, Chris George, the Executive Director of Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services in Connecticut, Sandra Feist, joining the conversation all the way from Minneapolis, listening to us there. Thank you, Sandra. We have one listener in Minneapolis now. She is the chair of the American Integration Lawyers Association and, of course, Connecticut State Attorney General William Tong. That's going to do it for our show today. Joelle Schrock is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers, Fatou Sangari, Sabrina Garone, Roberto Rojas. J.D. Allen is the producer, Ann Lopez is the senior producer, and Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.